On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we discuss Paul Skenes and Cal Raleigh. Not quite as good as they were a year ago, to say the least. What is going wrong with Mr. Skenes? Cal Raleigh is hitting 159. How did it get this bad? We go around the league, talk about Pope hat giveaway night in Chicago. Tim Anderson retires. The Padres are on fire. The Phillies less so. And then it's time for one of our favorite games of the year. Guessing the Heart and Hustle Award winners. Let's get to it. It's Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world whose velocity has been dipping year after year after year. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Jordan, if you picked up a ball right now, no warm-ups, how hard do you think you could throw it?
63.
Nice. That's almost as hard as Paul Skenes' fastball on his most recent outing. It's Wednesday, August 12th. That's our opener. We did a Paul Skenes panic meter check-in a couple months ago, maybe. And since then, things have only gotten worse. The defending National League Cy Young, if you look at the line, only was okay last night in Miami, Florida. Five innings, one earned run, five hits, just one walk. But if you watched the game, you would know that Paul Skenes did not look very good. There was a lot of hard contact. He lasted only five innings and 65 pitches. And most concerningly, the velocity on the heater was down. Just the fact that he was taken out of the game after 65 pitches in a close contest, a must-win game that the Pirates did not, is enough to make us worry again. The Pirates are spiraling out of control. They are currently five back of the NL wild card and six games under 500. Excuse me, I did that wrong. They are six back and five under. Would you rather be six back and five under or five back and six under? Either way, things are not going well.
Yeah, and I think that, like, there's a Pirates conversation that we sort of started to have on Monday. But I think that Skenes, because of who he is and what he has done to start his career, every outing is, you know, not to the same degree that it was as a rookie or even last year, but I still consider Skenes' outings as events in a way that very few other pitchers have gained that status. I am curious what happens every time he goes out there. That comes with a lot of scrutiny. That comes with a hyperfixation on where the fastball is at. And we've seen the velo. This has been a trend the whole season where it's like, wait, I thought this guy threw 100 miles an hour, and he just doesn't do that anymore. There have been starts where it has been much lower. But his start against Milwaukee last week, he was up to 99. It's not, and that was actually, I remember watching that, and that was a worse outing in terms of the line against Milwaukee, where he allowed three runs, also only went five innings, but he walked four. The stuff looked a little more crisp. Last night, I think he topped out at 96 and a half. I'm not sure if he touched 97. Definitely was not throwing 98. Definitely the lowest we've seen the velocity. More concerning was just that he wasn't getting any whiffs on really anything. His command was bad, and he allowed a home run to Estuary Ruiz, who, I should say, having one heck of a little season. So credit to Estuary Ruiz, if you haven't seen the numbers he's been putting up with the ultimate change of scenery candidate. What is this, his fourth or fifth organization? He's having a nice year. That said, giving up absolute rockets to Ruiz, and then the last pitch of his outing also almost went over the fence. Brian Reynolds robs a home run. I think coming off the off day with a rested bullpen, the way that Don Kelly described it after the game is, we take him out because that gave us the best chance to win. Paul Skenes, asked about it, said, yeah, I probably would have done that too, essentially admitting he wasn't particularly sharp at the end of that outing. He trusted his bullpen. The bigger problem in this game, of course, is that the Pirates offense scores zero runs. But Skenes is the focus, and the Pirates pitching staff as a whole being disappointing while the offense has taken a step forward. Skenes is the face of this team, and we said it yesterday. I don't know if we said it or on the pod, but like last night felt really, really important for him. for him individually, for the Pirates as a team, facing another team really right in the same range in the standings. I know they slip behind Miami, and instead the offense lays an egg. Skeens does not look good. And I mean, how much are we panicking? That's what we're calling the segment. I'm not sure, but I'm not feeling great.
So his average fastball last night on the four seamer was 95.7. Okay. 95.7. That is far and away the lowest total he's had in his career. The previous low was 96.3. Very rarely has he gone under 97 at all. Back in 2024, his first big league campaign, I mean, Skeens averaged for that whole season, 98.8 on the four-seam fastball. And one of the concerns about him coming out of the draft was that the fastball shape was not special. There was so much about this guy that was special, but the way that the heater came out of the hand, the movement on the pitch, all of it was not unique enough to succeed without elite velocity. And we're seeing that manifest in real time in year three. And I think it is worth having a conversation about what is happening here. Like, what are we witnessing? Because we saw this guy destroy the world the last two seasons. When he finished with an ERA under two in both of his first two seasons. Like, we're not talking about, oh, you know, he's pretty good. We have short memories. Like, what Jacob Mizorowski is doing is incredible. Paul Skeens, over 320 innings, 55 starts, 1.96 ERA. 1.96 ERA across 320 career innings before this year. And it's just gone backwards to such a preposterous degree. The ERA has almost doubled. So if I told you that the Pirates would be six back, in danger of the season spiraling out of control, because Paul Skeens underwhelmed for the better part of 2 months. His ERA since May 17th is 5.00. Like, what is this? How do we contextualize what we're watching?
Yeah, I mean, they're 9-16 in his starts, 3-13 in his last 16 outings. And I think that your point about the velocity and the fastball shape is a good one. It's also an interesting one to kind of interrogate, because part of why he was able to continue to is that, okay, the velocity, he was holding it, right? As you mentioned, he was averaging close to 99. And when you're up at that level, you're going to do just fine, especially if you can throw strikes. But it was also that he had expanded this arsenal to such a ridiculous degree, to where it was not just a couple of pitches, is this fastball that some scouts are doubting, and the slider, and okay, now he brings in the splinker. It almost feels like he's kind of searching for a lot of things at once right now. He hasn't quite figured out the exact pitch mix that's working for him this year with this current velocity. We have these conversations about pitchers that are, you know, aging. It's like, all right, how are they going to work with diminished stuff? There's the looming, terrifying cloud of, is he injured? Which, like, we could do on its own. I don't really want to speculate too far beyond that. Partially because, frankly, Paul Skeens has not expressed any concerns really at any point during this stretch that he is injured. And I know that that would be, there are a lot of pitchers that just pitch their way through it, and maybe he's hiding something. But I want to, for simplicity's sake, I want to at least, I'm not saying I'm not thinking that, but I don't. I also don't.
I do want to
shove it to the side.
I disagree. Okay. So here's why I think it is somewhat relevant, because being injured is not a binary situation. You are
true.
Like, it's not like I'm hurt and I suck or can't play, or I'm 100% healthy. It's a sliding scale. And one of two things could be possible if Skeens is in any way physically compromised, right? One is that he's hurt and he knows it and he's pitching through it. And that is, I would probably say that's like, what, heroic? It's commendable. This idea that he's going out there to try and win baseball games for the team with diminished stuff. Particularly, it's not as if they have another I guess, Carmen Majinski would fill that spot. And it's like what is that, right? The other thing that I think is possible is that Skeens is not at his best, but does not want to open Pandora's injury box, right? Maybe he knows something is not 100% right. He has to know something is not 100% right. He's throwing 95.
Yeah.
But like, he's trusting in the process that he will get back there if he continues down this path of just going out and playing, because that's how it's always kind of been. And he'll just rediscover it. And like, getting an MRI, then you know too much at that point.
Sure.
Then there's the scenario of like, is he just not in his best shape? Is he not carrying innings well? And that is difficult to know, because like, by all accounts, Paul Skeens works his butt off in the off season. And I'm skeptical that like, this guy was drinking beers on the beach over the winter. He's nuts about making sure that there's a training facility nearby. And so I think that's like easy to critique if you're doing like Pittsburgh drive time shock jock radio. He looks fat. He's not in good shape, but like, we can't know that. And so then like, what is that? Like, what could it be? It has to be one of these things.
Yeah. I think you're leaving out another possibility that's kind of along the spectrum that you're getting at, that's sort of in between the two. Yeah. And I know this isn't a satisfying answer, but I also think there's the thing that we know he's working his ass off in the off season, and what that means from like a physical composition, that's one thing. He's just throwing a lot. He has amassed a ton of innings for someone who's still only just turned 24. And sometimes with young pitchers, I know that we assume because he has been healthy and thrown 30 starts these last years, well, now he's just going to be good for the whole season. When asked about it, he was asked about kind of how he feels physically. And he said, yeah, the innings might not be so high, but clearly this year he's had a lot of long innings, and just the workload this year might be catching up to him in a way that it just sometimes does with young pitchers at some point, that maybe he's been throwing so much, and that could include the offseason, that he's just not at his best right now. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be something that you're also maybe hinting at, where it is an actual physical compromise. There is some level of injury that he is pitching through. All of these things are possible, but even if everything, if they did open him up and they said, you're all good, dude, that's possible too. And he's going through right now and he can't find it, whether it is,
right.
It could be, this is another part with Skeens in particular that is, I think, very relevant. And I have to imagine if we do completely rule out an injury, which might be hard to do almost impossible to do from the public side, but there are probably some very subtle mechanical things that are going wrong here. This is where I'm not an expert, but knowing how Skeens operates, whether it's an arm angle thing, how he talks about everything working in sync, this is part of what made him so great, part of why he was able to take the leap at LSU under the right coaching. It's possible that, and this is a big guy, right? This is a really big individual, that if everything is not going in the right direction, that it could cost you some velocity in a way. Now, like we said, all of these things are likely contributing to it, but I do think that right now it is just so unfortunate because of the circumstances of his role on this team, the expectations for him as an individual, what we thought this team could accomplish based on what they were for the first few months. And then now amidst this spiral where you have a game last night where it's like, you got to go beat the Marlins. You got to go outpitch Yuri Perez. And instead, Yuri Perez, who's the same age as Paul Skeens and has had his own ups and downs as a young pitcher, is cooking right now. He looks like he's getting better and better as the season gets on, where Paul Skeens is wearing down, and the Pirates season is in jeopardy of essentially being flushed down the toilet.
It's a real shame, because if you could copy and paste 2025 or 4 Skeens and put him on the Pirates, they're in a playoff spot.
Yep.
You know,
they are.
Like,
that's exactly
no
right.
Doubt. The last thing I want to mention, two more things on Skeens. One, my long-term outlook for this guy still has not changed. I think he's too talented and too athletic and too driven to not get this figured out. The second thing is, we've had a lot of conversation and there's been a lot of debate and about Jacob Mizorowski's innings, right? About handling his innings, but the Brewers monitoring his innings, being safe about his innings. Jacob Mizorowski is older than Paul Skeens. Like, I know that doesn't make sense in our brains, because Skeens has been here longer and he looks like he's 30 and Mizorowski looks like he's 8. But Jacob Mizorowski is older than Paul Skeens. And for all of the care and concern that has been thrown onto Jacob Mizorowski's workload, and the Brewers have been very intentional about that, the Pirates either chose not to do that or couldn't afford to do that over the last two seasons because they needed every last drop out of Paul Skeens because this operation was not working well enough where they could throw him on the IL for 2 weeks, where they could skip a start. They needed every last inning, and for what? Sure. And Skeens' own desire to compete, call it hubris, call it confidence, is always going to push him back onto the mound. Well, maybe this is where we've gotten. And I think the what Paul Skeens more than anything else is to like sit on a beach for a week and a half and to just like not throw a baseball. And is that going to magically have him throwing 99 again? Consistently? Maybe. I don't know. I do, but this is something I like half believe, is that every team per season should get something called the Cancun clause, where you can take a player and you just send him to Cancun for 2 weeks. It's like, hey, don't do anything. You're like, this is what you need to do with closers that are struggling. Cancun. Cancun clause, 2 weeks, come back, clear your head, rest your arm, you'll be fine. One thing I was talking to a scout about, maybe this is too nitty gritty, is that Skeens, if you look at some of the arm angle stuff, you can pick up the baseball on his kickback of his arm. Like he does like the reach thing. Like Ubaldo Jimenez was the king of this, right? Like the stab back. I saw some video where the ball now is more visible when he's doing that part of his motion compared to where it was in 2024. And maybe that has led to either less deception or less velocity. I just think that someone with the Pirates, you would think, would figure this out. And the fact that no one there has gotten the solution at this point, I think is an indictment of the way that that pitching group is doing things in 2026.
Yeah. And I think for a long time, you could just let Paul do his thing. And the guy just might need some help right now. And it doesn't seem like he's getting it. You know,
it's also
like I hope that doesn't mean he's hurt and that's the intervention we're talking about. But the guy just might need some coaching and some mechanical adjustments that are hard to make for any pitcher in season. But I do still trust his makeup, his drive, his commitment to figuring this out, assuming he is healthy, to get back on track. But the problem with – and I love the Cancun clause concept. Sorry, we don't have time. We can't be skipping Paul Skeens starts right now. Even this version of him, you know, like I – even this – like you – sorry, this Pirates season is spiraling and – and as disappointing as last night was, you really got to hope that there's still an opportunity for him to get back on the tracks and for the whole team to get back on the tracks for his sake, for Pirates fans' sake, and just for the front office sake. My goodness. I mean, I'm not sure that's going to survive if this team misses the playoffs by 8 games. But yeah.
This is also a completely different pitching development group than it was a year ago. And that's not just Bill Murphy at the big league level, but Jeremy Blyke, who was the director of pitching development for the Pirates. He's with the Diamondbacks now. The people that in the past could have helped Paul Skeens potentially get out of this, a lot of those folks don't work for the Pirates anymore.
Yeah. So the one other Paul Skeens thing that we did not mention, which I'm just going to use as a transition, but is also, I think, relevant to the workload. No, although maybe Pirates offense now has fallen into a bit of a skid. Maybe that's what he needs to like get the confidence back, is let Paul take some BP.
Just send him down not even
in a game. Not even a game, right? But like, let's just get him in. Let's just have him hit some homers, make him feel good. Is that Paul Skeens, also the workload was increased early on because he pitched in the WBC. And I'm not turning this into the WBC ruin, Paul Skeens to the WBC ruin Cal Raleigh transition, but there are definitely some players that have competed in the WBC that are having a tough time. It is definitely it is a different but an interesting conversation with hitters versus pitchers, right? Starting building your workload in February in a very significant way versus hitters missing plate appearances and the reps and getting ready for the season.
Yeah,
whatever the reason, Cal Raleigh did not have a great time at the WBC. As we know, he was terrible when he was playing. Then he told Randy Arozarena, no, I'm not going to shake your hand. That was combined with the general energy of Team USA, which we covered at length, which was a total slog. And unfortunately, that energy has carried directly into essentially this entire Mariners season, which has been a miserable watch for all involved. But while we talked about that on Monday, and they had another horrible loss last night for reasons that we don't need to go into at length, I do think that Cal Raleigh, we just talked about Paul Skenes, who was considered face of the league. He's just going to win all these awards every year. Of course, Cal Raleigh last season, a historic season, greatest season we've ever seen by a catcher, 60 home runs. And while coming into this year, we were said, okay, well, he's not going to hit 60 home runs again. But even if he hits 40, well, my God, what a player. He's probably still going to finish top 10 MVP, and the Mariners are going to be pushing for the division again and maybe the number one seed in the West. And like, this is still clearly the breakout they had last year. While it was likely an outlier in the sense that he's not going to do that again, he had shown so much that it was like, this is one of the best players in baseball. And instead, for all the reasons that we could speculate, which we can start to do now, just as we did with Skenes, Cal Raleigh this year has not only not been what he was last year, he has been one of the worst players in the league. Now, the reason we're talking about this now is twofold. One is after their terrible loss last night, in which Cal Raleigh struck out to end the game. Cal Raleigh essentially unprompted just came out of the locker and out of the clubhouse, I guess in front of, sometimes the post-game road team will basically do their stuff like in front of a backdrop in the tunnel. This is very common. And so oftentimes the manager will speak first and then they'll bring out the starting pitcher, win or loss, whatever. What it sounds like happened last night is that before anyone else spoke and unplanned, Cal Raleigh just came out and was like, just stood there for 10 minutes and was essentially said, I suck. This is terrible. We've all got to be better. I'm first and foremost. I got to be so much better. And, you know, I appreciate this from Cal because I'm sure this has been weighing on him for a long time. And I think he viewed that like there was time, not that he hasn't spoken during this at certain times, but sure. This is him going out of his way to come out and say, I know I suck. I have to figure this out. We all have to figure this out. This has not been fun. Now, it might be way too late. We've already speculated this on Monday's show for Cal individually, for the team that's going on this grueling road trip at the Yankees, at the Astros, at the Brewers, where they're at in the standings. But Cal Raleigh's season, we've just kind of referred to it as this historic fall off. It's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable fall in a way that I still cannot quite wrap my mind around. And the reason why I said the timing is also relevant here is part of the story of Cal's season is he was on the injured list for the first time. He missed more than a month with an oblique strain. And part of it too was, okay, well, he barely had his timing because he missed because of WBC. So he was cold to start the year. He started to find it and then he got hurt. Once he came back and there were brief flashes, you're like, okay, now the injury's behind him. He starts to play every day. We'll start to see Cal Raleigh again. Well, now we're at a point where he has played just as many games, played appearances before the injury and after. And he not only has he not improved, he's actually gotten worse. And now in total, he's not a qualified hitter because he missed so much time. But if you go minimum 350 plate appearances, which is not a small sample size, he has been the third worst hitter in baseball, ahead of only Ezekiel Tovar and Jarren Duran. So this is not just someone that is struggling relative to what he was last year. He has been actively awful. And that has resulted in him moving down in the batting order, deservedly so. He's not the only Mariners hitter that's struggling. But it is shocking. And this one is even harder to diagnose. But man, is it tough to watch and just a huge bummer.
It's a very interesting example of how and why hitters get out of whack, players get out of whack, where they start struggling for any number of reasons, and then they start to tinker, and then they start to overthink, and then they bring their baggage with them to the plate, and they get caught in between, and the approach gets completely frazzled, and then switch hitter too, and it's switch hitter. You know, he's got twice as much to carry, two swings to work on,
and he's catching.
And then it's mid-July. You look up at the scoreboard, and the OPS starts with a 5, and you hate yourself, and like that's how this happens. I'm so out, like, I cannot begin to tell you how out I am on WBC as an excuse. I'm not saying Cal's making that excuse, to be clear.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I'm not saying you are either, but I just want to nip that in the bud. Like,
sure.
You know who's been okay in playing the WBC? Wilson Contreras.
Peter like Armstrong.
Byron Buxton.
Yeah.
You know, Willie O'Brien.
Yeah, like, of course.
There are examples of players who freaking deal with it, who deal with it, who are mentally tough enough to carry a road bump and overcome it. What is most interesting to me about Cal Raleigh and where he stands this season is that his entire career has been, up until opening day this year, a very gradual green arrow moving up. That it was this very slow but confident and dependable build towards stardom. Like, yes, he broke out in 2025, but he half broke out in 2024 and half broke out before that in 2023. And he had never really in his pro career had a season that was worse than the previous.
That's exactly right. That is exactly correct. He has been getting better for like 6 years in a row.
And so how you, and that's not to say he didn't work hard or struggle or whatever, right? Like, baseball is not linear, I understand. But the idea of having to recover from a barrier, from something in your way, is not something he's really had to do in his career. And he has failed to do that so far. I think I would take the over on 2027 Cal Raleigh. And I would take the under on rest of season 2026 Cal Raleigh. More than Paul Skeens, more than us, he needs to go sit on a beach. Like, this is peak Cancun clause. Just wrap it up and go. Like, this is not viable. And that's not to, like, call into question Cal's toughness or his mental fortitude or whatever. Like, he just hadn't had to deal with that in the past.
Yeah. Honestly, like, and you could come up with some comps. Not really. The only one that really comes to mind is Cody Bellinger. To go from MVP to worst hitter in the league. And that was in 2 years with 2020 in between. And there was also an injury involved. Again, there's no perfect comp for this. And there's just so many contextual factors with Cal that makes it hard to compare. And like I said, this is still a fall off unlike anything we've ever seen. I mean, let's just keep it simple. Although this is actually relevant because I just stat headed this, and this is very relevant. Cal Raleigh right now is hitting 159. Okay. He's hitting 159. 363 plate appearances. That is tied for the third lowest batting average ever. In minimum 350 plate appearances. So this is not even qualified seasons, right? He is tied with really second. Sorry, he's tied for second lowest because the guy on here we're talking about Joe Gerhardt in 1885. Bill Bergen, the most famous worst hitter ever. If you're not familiar with Bill Bergen's Billy game, Bill Bergen, also a catcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers in the 1900s. So Bill Bergen, and then Adam Dunn, who hit 159 in 2011. Also, right above him on this list, Joey Gallo, 2022, Jackie Bradley Jr. when it went bad, 2021. Cody Bellinger, 2021. And then, of course, other people who maybe want to bring this one up is Chris Davis, of course, in 2018. So, yeah, man, it is bleak. It is very depressing. I feel very bad for Cal because I think Cal is an awesome person and someone who, even with the WBC stuff, was sort of tarnished his image as like a and I obviously disagree with how he handled that Randy thing, but I didn't think it was reflective of a bad teammate or someone that people don't like. I think Cal Raleigh's the man, and I think that he is really going through it right now in a way that sucks. That sucks to watch. It obviously has torpedoed the Mariners season in a lot of ways, and even more so than Paul Skeens, right?
Right.
To be honest. I mean, he's just so important for the whole thing. So he's not the only reason they're bad, but it is a pretty big one and one that we kind of had to talk about there. All right. Let's take a break, and we're going to get a little more positive in the B block, talking about those San Diego Padres Pope hat night. 40,000 Pope hats? Excuse me? We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Cornucopia of topics to get to. Let's go around the league. Trivia question. What is better than 39,999 Popats?
About 40,000. I think Jesse Rogers had it was even more than 40,000 in his story, which is notable because the attendance for last night's game in Chicago was less than 40,000, which means I know that that doesn't necessarily count all the people in the suites, which is what Jesse pointed out, but it sounds like they were ready to give out a Pope hat to literally everybody that came through the gates. So what was this? What was going on?
If you didn't hear, Pope from Chicago. Now, Jordan and I are members of the Jewish faith, and therefore we're not particularly educated on the ins and the outs of the papal community is the wrong word, but I'm going to go with it. However, we have absolutely loved the idea that the Pope is a Sox fan, that the Pope is at the World Series, and the White Sox have embraced this with open arms. Last night, the Sox gave away over 40,000 White Sox-themed Pope hats. For those of you who don't know about the Pope, what the Pope's about, Pope has a big hat. Now, that big Pope hat is usually white. The White Sox is black. The one that they give out has a big Sox logo on it. This was one of the funniest giveaways at the big league level that I can remember. This felt like something a minor league team would have done, and yet yes, they did it at the bigs. And the best part is that as the White Sox kept homering, they were using the Pope hat as the homer celebration in the dugout.
Yes. Unfortunately, the bullpen could not hold it, and the Reds ended up winning in extra innings, which resulted in a wonderful I don't think it's still the case if you go on MLB.com this morning, but I know
they'll
last
change those headlines
night,
on you.
I know last night. Oh, see, that's so funny. Never mind. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, if you go on MLB.com right now, the first thing you see is still the headline. It is the front page. And then, again, they lost this game. Fans show up en masse, good one, for sacred nice night on Southside. The White Sox handed out 40,000 Pope hats and saved one for the home run celebrations as fans flocked to Wrigley Field in honor of the team's most famous fan, Pope Leo XIV, on a night that included a peace be with you greeting. Meanwhile, the Reds... They get
back from a 4-0
a little bit
deficit.
Lower down on the headlines. A little bit lower down on the headlines, they get the subhead. Divine intervention? Red spoil White Sox Pope hat giveaway night with late rally. Wait, but I don't understand that headline. Are they saying that the intervention was that the Again, I don't want to get too far into this because we are not experts.
Reds, are the Reds Protestant?
Are the Reds the devil?
Is this the schism? Are the Reds the Orthodox Church? Are the Reds Jew? Are the Reds us?
We're swerving out of our lane here, okay? So bear with us.
But it is funny, divine intervention. It implies that the Pope is somehow, you know, somehow behind the Reds. The Reds Twitter account tweeted, "The Pope was probably impressed with that comeback." Honestly, probably. Impressed? Nah. Bummed? Yeah. The Pope knows that the Sox lost last night. Like, that is for sure. We've talked quite a bit about what the Pope knows and what the Pope doesn't know. Speaking of things the Pope knows, the White Sox put up posters that said, "Leo knows," with all the different members of the White Sox team. Yes, what is the face you're making?
Did you see who got the save last night? For the Reds?
Yeah. I'm guessing it's not Graham Ashcraft.
No, it's not. It's not. You see who got the save last night?
Wow. Whoa. It was Emilio Pagan. Emilio Pagan. Dude, not divine intervention. The Pagans win last night.
The opposite. Night. Wow. They were Pagan like, no, not so fast.
On Pope
this is
night.
Way too much. This is way too much religious prominence. And so Emilio said,
the devil is alive. The okay, Reds
should probably beat
the White Sox on Pope night. On Pope night, and Pagan got the save. Brother.
There is a lot. There's a lot going on here. So,
wow.
Anyway,
the White Sox, let me say, the White Sox should go full. We've said this before. The White Sox should go full blast and just beat Catholicism's team. And they should, they did a peace be with you during the seventh inning stretch. They should do the peace be with you every night.
So I agree.
Every seventh inning
stretch. I will say, and then we have one more White Sox topic. This is fun. I'm enjoying this. Maybe they'll do other versions of this. I need the White Sox to like not screw this up. Okay. I'm sorry to get serious here for a second.
Okay.
This season, which has been so much fun about like, oh, they got the Pope's backing. They're in first place. Listen, maybe the Tigers catch you, but like, you got a good enough team to make the postseason in the 2026 American League after losing 500 games 2 years ago. Like, let's land the plane here. Let's make this happen. Let's have postseason baseball. Maybe they don't host it, but they could. There is a path there for them to host a playoff game. Maybe the Pope will be there. Maybe he won't be. But either way, I hope that we don't have had all this fun with the White Sox this year. I really hope that they can get it done and get into October in some form. Obviously, these fans deserve it. The ones that are Catholic and the ones that aren't. I think that this has been a very fun story, and I am sure it will continue. But I hope that they can really get the job done and like make the postseason, because I don't want this to all end up being like, wait a minute, you blew it. You disappointed the Pope in your first season under the Pope. You had it and then you lost it.
Oh, can you imagine if they just go on a losing streak now after Pope hat night with Pagan getting the save? Must win. Tonight is a must win on the South side.
Must win. I agree.
Like a must win.
Who do we got? And especially because you might have to face
Luis Castillo.
And listen, you might have to face Pagan again. So just be prepared. One more bit of White Sox news.
Where's Pagan Smith? Top prospect.
He is in the big leagues. Tim Anderson. Folks, TA7 has announced his retirement, and it is significant because they are going to honor Tim Anderson on September 17th, and I guess he'll like officially retire White Sox after his very brief, very bad stints with the Marlins and Angels over the previous two seasons. But I will just say that there is a lot. We could have a longer Tim Anderson conversation. We don't really have time for that now. But while the fall off, you know, I guess the fall off is the theme of the episode, right? While what happened with TA and how quickly it went south, this is still a success story in a lot of ways. And I really do believe that.
Oh, my God.
This is someone. The fact that they drafted this guy 17th overall out of a Division II junior college hitters now, it's just not a demographic that teams really trust anymore. I mean, maybe they'll take him in
because they're all
10th round
going to school,
right? And then most of them are ended up transferring and playing D1, right?
To get so money. It's
like, why would I waste my time on this? For them to take that swing on this guy who again was mostly a basketball player growing up, like in high school, and then. Baseball, he just kind of fell into and just was really good at it. And then for him to just take the freaking league by storm, this guy was awesome. He was awesome. He did struggle in 17-18 and to come back at MVP votes, obviously in that short 2020 season, an all-star batting title. So much fun to watch. I remember so vividly watching him hit a home run in the minor leagues in June of 2014, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, one of our first road trips, and just being like, man, that is some bat speed. That is an athlete. Is he a good shortstop? No, but who cares? Like this dude's only been taking baseball seriously for a few years, and his physical talent carried him to a successful major league career, not only just relative to anybody. If you look at that draft, one of the best picks in that first round, clearly, yeah, sure, he went before Aaron Judge. That's not great, but that is not a first round filled with future major league all-stars, and Tim Anderson was one hell of a player. obviously, he will be remembered for a lot of other things involving Down Goes Anderson and some off-the-field shortcomings that have become public in kind of an embarrassing fashion. But let's just, I still think that this is an awesome
career. He didn't do anything
career.
Illegal. It was maybe I know, adulterous. I just think when...
Yes. For sure.
Peeve I have is when people just... not. I love you, Jordan. Off the field means like 85 different things. And on the scale
totally
of morality,
agree.
I
totally
think
agree.
It is important to define it. There was some sort of a lack of faith, perhaps, towards his betrothed, his beloved.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Tim Anderson will be remembered for what went wrong. I think the Down Goes Anderson, Jose Ramirez punch, like, was so shattering to the aura, to the image that he had built of himself, that it certainly does chip away some of that legacy. But you have to remember what this guy was at his peak. And I think that, like, when you close your eyes, I want everyone listening, close your eyes and just, like, what do you think about Tim Anderson? The answer is the walk-off home run at the Field of Dreams game. Like, that is one of the most enduring moments that we have had, frankly, in baseball in the in the 21st century in the regular season. It is an all-time awesome video, and he conjured that. And, you know, Tim Anderson lived a very unique baseball life. I mean, you could do an hour on why baseball needs more Tim Andersons. Like, this is someone who built his own path, someone that did not come up in the typical baseball system. Like, he didn't do big showcases. He wasn't playing travel ball. His father was in prison on drug trafficking charges for the first 15 years of his life. He was raised by his aunt and his uncle. Like, he did not have a stable upbringing, and yet he overcame that and was able to have a lasting, meaningful big league career. And what a fun player. What a fun player this guy was. And I'm glad that he's going to get a final moment, a celebration with the White Sox later this season.
Yeah, he deserves it. And also, like, sort of related to what we were just talking about, but, you know, there's positive buzz now in the South Side of Chicago. And I think that that should be an awesome crowd, right? That those should be intense games that are filling the stands. And so, you know, it'd be one thing if he decided to do this last year and they just sucked and he showed up and there were, you know, 17,000 people there.
Sure.
That should be a really cool scene. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like.
I actually do just one last, like, I think that Tim Anderson is a very interesting sort of litmus test for how people think about legacy, where you can, I'm saying you, like you, the listener, you can choose. You really can choose whether you want to see the glass half full or the glass half empty, whether you want to remember people for the good or the bad, whether you want to lead with optimism or pessimism. Tim Anderson getting punched out by Jose Ramirez was unbelievably embarrassing. Him hitting that home run of the Field of Dreams game was so heroic and celebratory. And yes, you can hold both of those things in your mind, but at the end of the day, I want to remember the good things about people best as I can.
Yeah.
Speaking of good things, Jordan, speaking of things, the San Diego Padres are a good thing. This team is kicking butt. The dads are hot. Hashtag hot dads. 14-4 over their last 18 games. The stars are finally starting to hit. Jackson Merrill has been outstanding now for about a month and a half. Padres had the worst offense in baseball at the All-Star break. Dead last. 30 out of 30 in OPS and WRC+. But since the All-Star break, they're number one in WRC+. From worst to first, it is backed up by the underlying metrics. They have Luis Rengifo DHing and hitting second. Their catchers have been awesome somehow. They have tied the Philadelphia Phillies and the Arizona Diamondbacks for that last NL wildcard spot. The Diamondbacks, Padres, and Phillies all have the exact same record right now, 64-57. It is three teams for two spots. What is going on in San Diego?
Jackson Merrill, remembering that as a rookie, we were talking about, hey, by the way, connected to our first topic, right? Paul Skeens wins Rookie of the Year. Jackson Merrill gets votes because he was that good. And there was a real argument for him being the guy because he was playing every day, because he was playing center field for the first time. Last year was a very strange season. He was dealing with multiple injuries, a concussion, and just a total, for someone that young who seemed ascendant, really disappointing year. Cold to start this year. Since July 1, he is third in baseball in F4. Behind only PCA, who's like way ahead of everybody else. And hello, Stephen Kwan.
Yeah, what the heck?
Since July 1. Stephen Kwan's back, folks. But Jackson Merrill is, he is just, I mean, man, oh man. And what is so cool about Jackson Merrill, and AJ Cassaville at MLB.com had a great story about his kind of mental approach. And like, Jackson Merrill, oftentimes with these young hitters that are so advanced, we think about, oh man, think about advanced, right? The plate discipline, this incredible,
they just know how to do
ball
it.
Ball strikes.
They just know how to do it. Less is more.
But in Jackson Merrill's case, over this stretch, he has a 4.6% walk rate. He is still chasing a lot, but his bat to ball skills and his ability, and this is what I know our pal Foolish Baseball pointed out when after his rookie season, it was like, no, I am buying into Jackson Merrill. His bat to ball quality is so good. Like, he is so good at hitting the ball hard, optimal angles, hitting different pitches in the air hard, that even though he's really not walking and he is still chasing a lot, he's doing a ton of damage. And what's so impressive about him is that he's not a big dude, right? You don't look at him and you think, man, this isn't James Wood who's flicking balls out to the opposite field. And even the bat speed is good, but it's not like, and yet he is just such a good hitter to where now
he finds the barrel,
just a beautiful left-handed swing. And now he is a game-changing offensive talent, which in tandem with, holy crap, Ty France, right? I mean, this is Ty France did have some runs with Seattle where he was close to this, but not this good. I mean, it was not this good. And the cool part about that is that this is the team that drafted him and he really didn't have room on in sort of the first iteration of these good Padres teams. Now he has a huge role in this team. Machado has been playing better, as we said. Tatis is finally starting to hit for power in a real way. The starting pitching, even after adding Mize and Ray, like, we'll see if it holds up. We want to see Randy Vasquez pitch in October. Walker Buehler is still starting games. But the bullpen's elite, and if this offense is this good, like, yeah, I you got to take them seriously. And I do think that this trio of teams, we can bring the Phillies into this. The Diamondbacks continue to play well. A bad loss last night against the Rockies, but I am taking the Padres seriously now. And this needed to happen. I mean, Merrill was the one for me to take them seriously. He needed to start playing like an MVP candidate again, the way he was as a rookie, and now he's doing it. So I'm happy to take them seriously.
Weird ass loss for the Phillies last night as well, losing 2-0 in St. Louis after a heroic win on Monday night, in which they had basically 1.5 available relievers and won anyway. But the loss last night was pretty bad. They hit into 4 double plays, lost 2-0. They had bases loaded, no outs in the 8th inning. Ryan Stanek comes into the game, double play, fly out.
Oh my gosh. What a moment.
Were you watching that? That was electrifying.
I was. He was fired up.
Yeah. Ryan has been pretty good now for like 4 months.
Since he wasn't traded?
Since he wasn't traded.
Yeah, like, come on now. The Phillies could have used him?
Phillies saw him. They were like, hey, can we get that guy? And just come on over here. Since Luis Arraez showed up, Bryce Harper is walking 1 out of every 3 plate appearances. He is walking at a 33% clip since they got Arraez. This is so funny. This is so interesting because it tells me that Bryce Harper, when he chooses to and when he trusts the guy hitting behind him, can be way more selective than he's been. He clearly feels as if he needs to like get RBIs. And that creates a different approach. And the irony, of course, is that Luis Arraez is 0 for his last 15.
Yeah, and Bryce grounded into two of those double plays last night. I think that the other interesting thing, like, it was a thing coming into the year that Bryce wanted to walk more.
And then they hit Alec Bohm behind him for months.
Well, exactly. Now he's up to 82 walks this season, which is already his most since 2021. And he's going to get to, I don't think he's going to get to 130, which he had, you know, in his last year with the Nats. But I mean, 100 is his high with the Phillies. And I think he's going to easily surpass that. I mean, that's not going to be close. So yeah, but it's just a disjointed, weird offense right now. And we kind of knew that, right? I think that the funny thing about the Arise cold streak and his introduction to the Phillies was he homers in his first couple games and feels like he's giving them that spark. For most guys, when they go over 15, it's like, that's baseball. Luis Arraez, he doesn't go over 15. That just never happens. This is the first time all season he's gone hitless in 3 out of 4 games, let alone 4 out of 5. So, you know, and that doesn't mean I think he sucks now. It's just like, it's very rare to have this.
And when he's going bad, it's an awful look.
It's
like the double play grounded into last night. It's like second pitch of the at bat and an advantage count. It's like, oh
yeah. Yeah. So he's going to have to get it back. And now, yeah, I mean, frankly, now it's just a matter of like the Phillies, Cubs feeling good. Cubs taking care of business. Don't think they're going to catch the Brewers, but they're taking care of business.
It's going to come
maybe
down.
They make the Brewers sweat,
these three teams now
is going to be really, really, really interesting. And the Padres have certainly, and maybe one of these others hangs around Miami. We're kind of burying Pittsburgh at this point. Miami's playing better, and they're right there. But I do think it's going to be these three teams, and can make good cases for all of them. And one of them is going to be horribly disappointed. So I think the Phillies certainly have the most riding. Like them missing would be the Padres do because they always do. But the Phillies really. They're going to be feeling it now. Now they're good enough to make it. And I still think that they will, but yeah, pressure's on.
The Phillies go to Arizona first week of September, and then the Diamondbacks and Padres finish the season with a 3-game set in San Diego. That could be absolutely enormous. Speaking of enormous, Field of Dreams game tomorrow night in Dyersville, Iowa. Not something that we're particularly jazzed up about. I went a couple years ago and saw it. Jordan and Jake generally believe that baseball movies are fine. Sandlot's the best one and the rest of them are just okay. I think they should do a baseball movie around Sandlot. They should just make guys play a game at like a really bad field.
Right, because we had, you know, version of the tribute during All-Star Game, which was well received. I agree. We don't care about this movie that much. That said, our first road trip, of course, we did go to the Field of Dreams in 2013, long before. And that's my only point of reference, because you did attend the Field of Dreams game a few years ago. So you have seen it in its completely built up state.
Yeah.
As someone who was only there once in 2013 when it was still nothing. Whenever I see the shots of it on TV, I literally can't even believe what it's ridiculous. Like, if you've been there,
it's
obviously, if you've seen the movie, but if you've been there, it's cool. Impossible to fathom that there are major league games there. And now with Netflix involved, that is the real X factor and what is different about this one. And we will see because I will be on vacation and not watching this, but I look forward to hearing how this goes. And Phillies Twins, two teams that are, I guess, both still playing important games. So
yes, it will be an important game, and there will be no ABS challenges at the Field of Dreams game because they don't have the tech set up. Will that come into play? Almost certainly. Will people have asked about this? Absolutely. I can't wait to see how it plays out. Jordan, let's take a break. When we get back, it's one of the best games of the year. It's Heart and Hustle time.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's time for one of our favorite annual games, and this time Jake Mintz is playing. Earlier this week, the MLB Alumni Association announced the 30 winners of the Heart and Hustle Award, an award given out by former players to, and this is officially in the press release, this prestigious honor is presented annually to active players who exemplify a true passion for the game and who best embody the values, spirit, and traditions of the game. Voted on by former players. All right, now that amorphous description is something that we have leaned into and trying to solve every year for at least probably almost the last 10 years. Normally, when these award winners come out, there's one for every team, and then there's a league-wide winner that comes out at the end of the season. Normally, Jake sees them, I don't. I guess them, and then Jake tells me if I'm right. This time, roles will be reversed. Jake has only seen one of this year's winners, and we are going to go through the whole league, and he has already written down his guesses. I will tell him how many he gets correct. I think at best I've probably gotten like 17 or 18 right in a single season. Last year was a down year for me. Got closer to 10 to 12. We'll see how Jake does. Anything else before we get started?
This honor recognizes those who exemplify a passion for the game and embody its values, spirits, and traditions. Obviously, here we go.
We begin in the American League with the A's of Yolo County. Who is the winner?
Jacob Wilson.
Incorrect. Shea Langeliers, 0 for 1. We go to the Baltimore Orioles.
This one is impossible because the Orioles all season long have not embodied the values, spirits, and traditions of our sport. I'm going to go with Pete Alonso.
Pete Alonso is correct. Okay, we got one correct for Jake. The Boston Red Sox.
Caleb Durbin. If it's not Caleb Durbin, we're burning Fenway down.
You are burning Fenway down, and it is Wilson Contreras.
That is unacceptable.
I wonder when this was voted on. I'm very curious about the timing of the votes for this, because that is certainly relevant for
Wilson Contreras just didn't run out a ground ball and got booed. Is that embodying the value, spirits, and traditions?
That's a great point. All right, 1 for 3. Chicago White Sox.
Tristan Peters.
Oh, I thought you would get this one. It's your guy, Sam Antonacci. So, sorry. Mm. You should have gotten that one. Cleveland Guardians.
Travis Bezzano.
No, Jose Ramirez. Don't overthink that one.
Wait, whoa. He's barely played.
Sorry, Jose Ramirez. Jose Ramirez is the answer. He will always be the answer. He was the answer last year. He was the answer the year before that. He was the answer the year before that. He was the answer.
So in my mind, obviously I know that.
I think I believe he's won it 5 years in a row for Cleveland.
Perfect play. Like, he is the player for this dumb thing. But in my mind, I was like, well, this year he was out for 2 months. It's got to be someone else.
All right. Nope. Great. Nope. Well, it is interesting because I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure he's never won the overall one. And so maybe they're just still trying to get him to win.
Get him that. Yeah.
One. So that's a huge whiff on your part. Detroit Tigers.
Kevin McGonigal.
No, Dylan Dingler. So
what?
Sorry.
This is. Oh!
Jake's just going with the short guys, and he has been wrong so far. All right, Houston.
Let's stick with that. Nick Allen. Let's stay short.
Is that your real guess?
No, my real guess is Jeremy Pena.
Pena won last year. Cam Smith this year. So tough go of it for Jake Mintz so far. Kansas City Royals.
Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah, correct. Bobby Witt Jr. has won the free space overall award back-to-back years, which I think is the only player that has done that. I think he's the only one that has won consecutive awards. So
he does embody the value, spirits, and traditions.
So Jake gets that is a free space. Your second correct answer. Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
I'm going to say Mike Trout is back.
Mike Trout is back. Last year, Zach Neto won, but Mike Trout does win this award. Has he ever won it overall? He has not. Maybe this will be the year. Minnesota Twins.
Byron Buxton.
Cody Clements gets the nod this year for
that
his heart
is
and his
so
hustle.
Stupid. That is so stupid. If his name was Cody Johnson, he's not getting this award. That is the most Nepo baby BS I've heard in a long time. I'm fired up.
I don't know if Roger Clemens literally just voted for his son. He is a former player. I don't know if he's voting.
That's absolutely what happened. They were like, oh, well, Roger's kid. Got to vote for Roger's kid. Literally embodies the tradition of the sport.
Buxton did win last year, but no, it is Cody Clemens this year. New York Yankees.
Okay, so the correct answer to this is Jose Caballero. That's like the correct answer, but I'm going to say it's Paul Goldschmidt again.
It is Paul Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt won last year, and Paul Goldschmidt wins again this year. Seattle Mariners.
Really tough one. This is a tough one. It can't be Cal Raleigh. If Cal they voted for year, Cal Raleigh.
It can't be Josh Naylor this year.
Yeah. I'm just going to work you through my thought process. Brendan Donovan, if he hadn't gotten hurt, would have won this. This is his award. Julio is an interesting one, but he is not white, and it's helpful to be white in this game. I'm going to go with Cole Young.
Great guess. That would have been my guess. Luke Raley gets the award there. So God bless Luke Raley. You had no chance there. Tampa Bay Rays.
The correct answer is Johnny DeLuca, but I'm going to go with Chandler Simpson. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. DeLuca has not played enough. Well done. Chandler Simpson is the winner. A fifth one correct. All right. Two more American League teams.
Alumni.
Texas Rangers.
Alumni love guys that run. Okay. Anybody that tries to steal bases has a leg up in this. I'm going to go with Brandon Nimmo for the Rangers.
Good guess. No, Ezekiel Duran. So,
you know what? I wrote Ezekiel Duran down on my list and then changed it at the last moment. That was a bad call by me.
All right. You do not get credit there. Duran, you know, maybe an all-star snub, but he is your Heart and Hustle Award winner. One more in the American League. It's a layup. It's the Toronto Blue Jays. It is Ernie. It was Ernie last year. Okay. So Jake goes 6-for-15 in the American League. How are you feeling so far?
Not great. I actually feel angrier than I do disappointed. Like the only one there that I missed, Cleveland was stupid because he got hurt. Ramirez shouldn't have been the guy. And like, Duran, I should have just said it, but I feel okay.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the National League and go to the Snakes of Arizona, the Arizona Diamondbacks.
This is one of the layer uppers, but the look on your face is telling me it's not Corbin Carroll, so you shouldn't have done that. But I did write Corbin Carroll down, and so I need to stick with Corbin Carroll. But based upon the way you're carrying yourself, I think it's Geraldo Perdomo.
It's Nolan Arenado. How about that? Nolan Arenado, who's like just kind of floating by. He hasn't been good. He hasn't been bad. He's kind of been what they needed.
Yeah. I just want to say this is the perfect example of why this award makes absolutely zero sense. Because Corbin Carroll not getting this award on his own team turns the whole thing into a delightful farce.
Nolan Arenado has actually been better than I thought. 109 OPS plus, 18 homers. So I was high on him coming into the year, so I feel good about that.
Sure. All right.
Back to the Heart and the Hustle with the Atlanta Braves.
It's got to be Matt Olson. He plays every day.
I would have thought so. Matt Olson won it last year, but it is Dubon? Mauricio Dubon. Dubon.
Oh, I wrote that down. I wrote that down too. Dang it.
Sorry. Oh. All right. Chicago
it should
Cubs.
Be Jim Jarvis. Chicago Cubs is tough. So many white guys who run really hard wherever they go. I'm going to say Nico Horner again.
It is Nico Horner. Nicely done.
So
he won it last year. So you've really, Witt, Goldschmidt, Ernie, Nico are all repeat winners. You've gotten those correct. But you know what? We'll take them. We'll take the wins where we can get them. Cincinnati Reds.
I think alumni like Sal Stewart. I think they're like, that guy just hits. No. Sal Stewart's my guess.
I like that guess, but no, it is Spencer Steer for some reason. I guess because he plays multiple positions. God. TJ Friedl won it last year. Colorado Rockies.
It's either Jake McCarthy or Mickey Moniak. I'm going to go with Jake McCarthy.
Nicely done. Jake McCarthy. All right. Got a couple UVA boys in there.
You have to think about how alumni are watching games. Like, oh, the guy with the blonde hair that runs around all the time. He hearts and hustles.
So I'm so interested in like, right. Is it the former players of these teams? Because right. How many just average former players are watching the Rockies?
Like, right.
Super interested. Okay. We should ask more about this. We could probably find out more about this voting block.
I actually don't want to.
By the way, Hunter Goodman won last year, but hitting too many home runs okay. This year. Not very
too good.
Heart and hustle of him.
Too good.
Los Angeles Dodgers.
This is such a tough one. So many good candidates.
Really
here.
Hard.
Here are the guys that you could give it to. Miggy Rowe, Mookie Betts. I think Tommy Edman was out for too much time at the beginning of the year, but in a normal year, he could totally win this. Max Muncy, Andy Pages. I'm going to go with Max Muncy.
That would have been my guess, but Miggy Rowe gets it done. Miggy Rowe, once again, for the third straight year with an OPS plus over 100 and still doing Miggy Rowe stuff. So Pages won last year, which I think was one of the surprising ones. A year ago, Miami Marlins.
The whole team. The entire team. Javier Sanoja is the correct answer, but it's either Otto Kemp or Xavier Edwards. So you just have to coin flip this. It's really tough. Otto Kemp. Did I say Otto Kemp? Otto Lopez.
You did.
Or Xavier Edwards.
You did say Otto Kemp.
It's got to be Otto Kemp.
Yeah.
it's
not Otto Kemp.
Otto Lopez was an all-star, so he was more visible. I'll go with Otto Lopez.
It is Otto Lopez. Good job. Otto Kemp, what's he up to? Did not. Well, we're coming up on the Phillies. You can guess him for the Phillies here in a second, but we're not there yet.
I won't.
Milwaukee Brewers.
Tough. Also, the whole team. Has Bryce Turang gotten too good? That is the question of this one. Sal Frelick missing time is another important thing to note. When did Sal Frelick get hurt? Because Sal Frelick has been out since July 17th. Yeah, I'll go with Frelick. I'll go with Sal Frelick.
It is indeed Frelick, another repeat winner. So he defends his heart and hustle crown. New York Mets.
Not a lot of heart or hustle. It's got to be one of the two rookies. I think Ewing came up too late, and so I'm going to say Carson Bench.
Benj is correct. Nicely done. Philadelphia Phillies.
Bryson Stott.
No, Brandon Marsh. I think you could have gotten. I think Marsh. Yeah. I mean, you know, Stott's a fine one, but sure. No, that is you get that one wrong. Otto Kemp.
Brandon Marsh, by the way. Brandon Marsh, yeah. By the way, has been abysmal for like a month now. It's a real bummer.
All-star. Never take it away from him. Pittsburgh Pirates.
If it's not Jake Mangum, we're done here.
It is Jake Mangum. Jake Mangum won it last year for the Rays, and he obviously wins it for the Pirates. 4 to go, San Diego Padres.
I'm going to go with Ty France.
Nicely done. Ty France. Ty France gets it done here. San Francisco.
Harrison Bader? I'm kidding. Is it Victor Barrichello? This is such an impossible one.
Drew Kavanaugh.
Matt Chapman. No. Matt Chapman usually wins this. Has he been out for too long? He got hurt. I'm going to go with Matt Chapman. Just play it safe.
Okay, so it's a rise. Would you have guessed a rise?
I don't know. I went off the active rosters when I scrolled.
Yeah, I think, which obviously, right, you didn't have him there. I was going to tell you before
he would have
started,
been an
like,
easy one.
You can still be on. Yeah, so I
don't know.
Well,
how to
I'm not
going to
say you definitely get that one, but I could have believed you that you maybe could have got it. Okay, two sure. more. St. Louis Cardinals. Oh, actually, only one more because you know the Washington Nationals winner. So St. Louis Cardinals. By the way, Matt Chapman. J.J. Weatherholt is correct. Matt Chapman did win last year, so, you know, reasonable guess. J.J. Weatherholt is correct. And for those who do not know who won the Washington Nationals, since that is the one you have seen, why don't you let our listeners know?
Jacob Young.
For the second year in a row, which brings your total without Jacob Young, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
Pretty good.
14 out of 30, and that is without a rise. Some of those are repeats, like Frelick and, I guess, Mangum, technically, and Horner and Ernie and Goldschmidt and Witt. But I am impressed that you got McCarthy. I'm impressed that you got France.
Ty France.
Yeah, and honestly, Pete Alonso, too, to a degree. Although, at that one, I mean, he posts.
He's played all year. Sense.
Chandler Simpson, there's a couple ones there. Yankees could have tripped you up. But what did we learn this year before we say goodbye?
What did we learn about the way alumni watch the game, about the heart and the hustle? We learned that they like players that run. That is the theme of this season. Fast guys. So Witt, Simpson, Ernie, Horner, Jake McCarthy, Mangum. Otto Lopez, Sal Frelick, Mangum, Weatherholt. They love guys that are running around, man.
Yeah, so this year it was more hustle and heart than heart.
More hustle than heart.
Yeah, more hustle than heart. I was saying we would maybe put the hustle before the heart.
Yeah.
But I love this so much. I look forward to asking around now more seriously. And honestly, right, like who? Okay, well, here, the easy, obvious way to end it. Who's going to win the whole thing? Does Bobby Witt Jr. three-peat? Just like the Dodgers? I kind of think no, but I'm not really sure who I would pick over him. This would be a good year to give it to Trout, I think. But I don't know. What do you think? Who does Witt just have a JJ dynasty Weatherholt running?
I think Weatherholt. Keep an eye on Weatherholt. I think Jake Mangum deserves one in the David Eckstein mold.
And Eckstein is one. Yep. By the way, the last point we should obviously mention. Pitchers, you can't hustle, and you have no heart.
You can't hustle.
So
you
have no heart. Even bother. There's no sense.
Don't try.
Especially now that you're not running the bases. All right, we're done. Thank you to Andrew Hartz. Thank you to Ross Tudor for producing this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbercast. I'm heading on vacation, so you will have Jake and a special guest co-host for the next three shows. So I will be back in a week. I will be back. Or no, more than a week. Next Friday, I will return. I look forward to seeing how many games under 500 the Mariners are by then. How many games over 500 Boston Red Sox, they kind of suck now too. So we're back to nobody being good, certainly in the American League. But I'm looking forward to getting some time off and logging off, dude, and hanging out in Maine.
You're going to see so many Red Sox hats up there in Baja.
Oh, that's true. All right. Well, I'm that's true. Oh, yeah.
Here's my prediction for your vacation. Mm-hmm. You see a Caleb Durbin jersey at Acadia. Okay.
I'll be in Acadia. If you, I hope to mostly unplug, but I do hope that I can talk to a Red Sox fan about Caleb Durbin. Whether or not I see a jersey or jersey, I look forward to talking to someone in Maine about Caleb Durbin. But you can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you are hustling and showing heart, and we will talk to you all soon.